Fastamai, hello and welcome to this edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. A journalist who spent most of his childhood on the Isle of Man ran for local government in the United States last week. 33-year-old Peter Bolton got more than 500 votes in Ward 2 in the DC Council elections, a municipal authority for America's capital, Washington, DC. He ran as a member of the DC Statehood Green Party and describes his politics as radical and progressive. The world's been gripped by election fever in the last week, with all eyes turned to events in the United States. Naturally, journalists scramble around looking for a Manx link, and here on Agenda we think we found one. Aside from the presidential contest, there were lots of regional elections going on in the states across the US. Peter Bolton is a journalist who grew up here and stood for election last week for local government in Washington, D.C. Never likely to win against the Democratic machine, he came bottom of the race, but admits he was a political newcomer with ideas which he called radical. Before the election results were announced, I arranged to interview Peter. He first explained to me his Manx links.
I spent most of my childhood and adolescence in the Isle of Man. Neither of my parents are Manx. I was born in the United States in 1986. My mother is an American, my father British, and they moved there because my father's parents had retired there in the late 1980s.
How did you find yourself moving from the Isle of Man to where you are currently? Fill us in on the background, if you will, that brought us to this point, to you running in this local government election.
Oh, well, I moved to Washington, D.C. over a decade ago, and it was because I wanted to live in a large city, but I just didn't fancy London. I came to Washington for an internship and just stuck around. My mom and dad started spending more time in the United States, and my sister then moved out here with her family about 5-6 years ago. So I stuck around, and as for how I got into the election, I reached out to the Green Party asking them who their candidate was in this district that I live in, and they said they didn't have a candidate, and they asked me whether I would like to step up to the plate. And I said I'd be happy to, though I have absolutely no political experience and am a complete newcomer.
But you have worked as a journalist for some time, is that fair to say?
Yes, correct. I am a journalist. I write overwhelmingly about political issues. And I also have an undergraduate degree and a master's degree in political type studies.
So it's fair to say you've got a good knowledge of the issues at play. But I suppose, first and foremost, how would you describe your politics? I've seen it billed as by yourself as radical. How would you describe it?
Well, on my campaign website, I describe myself as an eco-socialist. The Green Party is an anti-capitalist party, but we make clear that we oppose both capitalism and the sort of authoritarian state socialism that existed in the Soviet Union. I'm very critical of what some people call free markets, neoliberalism. I think that this has led to a huge amount of wealth and income inequality. I think you can see that in my city in particular, with huge amounts of gentrification, homelessness, people being pushed out to neighboring jurisdictions, very high cost of living. My politics were really influenced by the 2008 capitalist crash. Before that, I was actually quite conservative, but then I became interested in some kind of alternative. I guess you could call it socialist. As far as the environmental side, it seems to me that the current economic system we have is going to make continued organized human life impossible. We're treating the planet like an endless resource that we can take and take and take from, and then a bottomless garbage can that we can just dump whatever pollution and waste we want into. So I make no apology for the fact that I think that we need very radical reform. I would like to see a future where governments put the interests of people and planet before profit and put the interests of ordinary working and middle class people above those of developers, corporations, and other private interests.
So what's the response been like in your area to your campaign and some of the ideas you're putting forward?
Positive. I should give some background. The politics of Washington, D.C. are completely dominated by the Democratic Party and have been for many decades. My party is at a huge disadvantage in terms of financial resources, and we get something of a media blackout and tend to not get very many endorsements. So it's been a very uphill battle. But nonetheless, I have gotten a positive response from some progressive organizations, one called TENAC, which is the Tenants Activist Committee, I believe is what that stands for. They gave me a high honorable mention, though did not endorse me. They endorsed the Democratic Party candidate, though I heard on the grapevine that they had done so because they thought she was most likely to win and they would have to work with her once she was on the council. But there were a few voices within the organization that wanted to endorse me. I've had some positive feedback over social media. Obviously, I haven't been able to campaign that much in person, but I think overall it's been positive. I think that people appreciate that there's some kind of alternative to the Democratic Party, because the Republicans don't even run in this city. And then the Democrats have become sort of a center-right party that don't really support any of the things that in Europe, say, would traditionally be associated with social democratic and labor parties. There hasn't been much of an effort, say, to build a national health service type system at the local level.
And do you think you're offering, you are filling that sort of, as you mentioned, in Europe we would see a right-left sort of a split along those lines, but in America perhaps both the two main parties are center-right, right-wing. Are you filling a gap that simply is not being represented politically in your jurisdiction?
Absolutely. Oh, well, I would certainly like to think so. One thing, if I can correct you, I don't think that the U.S. has two center-right parties. I think it has one center-right party, which are the Democrats, and one far-right party, which is increasingly fascistic in nature. I would say if your average Democratic Party member of Congress in, say, the UK would fit more within the Conservative Party, and then you wouldn't have anything. Maybe the Republicans would be like the far-right extreme of the Conservatives. Even somebody like Bill Cash would be not that extreme in a U.S. context. And so what we've had at the D.C. level is a Democratic Party that moves further and further to the right, and really no one competing with them to their left. So I could talk about all different kinds of policies. The healthcare one obviously is central because, of course, in the U.S., there's a system of private health insurance where you don't have care that's free at the point of service like you do in all of Europe and in Canada. I don't know how much you'd like me to go into the details of my policies.
Yeah, sure. And I've been through your website, Nate. It's good detail. You really have left no stone unturned when it comes to policy. It's always a bit reductive to ask candidates to do this, but if you could perhaps focus on a couple of the main priorities that you have. I noticed rent controls, for example, taking a prominent position in some of your literature there.
Right. Well, currently in Washington, there is rent control, but it only applies to certain buildings. I think it's buildings built before 1975, and why they pick that date, I have no idea. I see no good reason why we couldn't have rent control that applies to everything, because people are so rent burdened at the moment that many people are paying almost, or in some cases even more than 50% of their income just to cover the rent. And that's been a disaster for working and middle class people, many of whom have been pushed out of the city altogether and now live in usually Maryland or Virginia, which are the two states that border, Washington. I've also got measures like a moratorium on evictions and a moratorium on utility shutoffs, because that's another huge problem. I'd also like to see more investment in public housing, affordable housing, and then there's this issue of social housing, which has been brought up by another candidate named Will Merrifield. He's running for the whole what's called an at-large district, and he uses Vienna as his model. And it's sort of a mixed income housing model where I think people pay something like only 30% of their, a maximum of 30% of their income on their rent. And just to add a final thought on that, it's important to keep in mind, and I make this point constantly when I talk publicly, is much of what I'm advocating is only radical in a US context. Much of this has been successfully implemented in other countries, especially in Europe, but even Canada in some cases.
You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. We'll pick up where we left off for the second part of our interview with Peter Bolton, a journalist who grew up in the Isle of Man and now lives in the US. He stood for elections to the DC Council last week for the DC Statehood Green Party. Where does the aversion to the words radical and socialist, where does it come from in the States? And is it a stereotype we can assume of the whole country or not? Because from a UK context, you hear the word socialist being bandied around in political discourse in the States, and it's almost like a horrible insult, which seems quite bizarre compared to some of the traditions we have in Europe.
Well, first of all, I would say that Britain is the most right-wing country probably in all of Europe. It's somewhere, but politically, I'd say it's somewhere between continental Europe and the United States. As for your question about why socialism is seen so negatively and even used as a term of derision in the United States, I think there are a number of reasons. I don't claim to have a complete answer because it's a very complicated question. I think part of it has to do with the legacy of the Cold War, where there was this Red Scare, as it came to be known, that was whipped up. The leader was this individual named Joseph McCarthy, who was this lunatic senator who from Wisconsin, I think it was, and he conducted these trials. They were like witch hunts, going after people in Hollywood. Anyone who was considered to be left of center was derided as a communist or a communist sympathizer. Then, of course, Richard Nixon had his enemies list of people who were considered to be subversive. I think another reason is the fact that the United States was a frontier society, and there's this fetishization of the individual and people pulling themselves up by their bootstraps and seeing everyone as, you know, needing to make their own way in life, as opposed to seeing people as interdependent and as opposed to recognizing the need for social protection. And I think then the third reason I would identify is the way that right-wing interests have infiltrated the culture of the United States to a huge extent. There's a very interesting book I was reading recently by a journalist called Jane Mayer. It's called Dark Money. And people like the Koch brothers in particular spent huge amounts of money infiltrating academia, think tanks, organizations like the American Enterprise Institute. And these organizations, they set the public debate in many ways. They get invited onto media and told how, they tell us how, oh, free market solutions is the only way, and so on. The UK, by the way, has suffered with that to some extent. There's this organization in London called the Institute of Economic Affairs, which I think has funding from other such right-wing interests and pushes this idea. You know, Margaret Thatcher, of course, said there's no such thing as society, as if we're all just our own atoms in this vacuum who have to fend for ourselves and fight in this social Darwinistic type situation. So I hope that goes a little bit of the way in answering your question. Mm. But as I said, it's a cultural thing. It's an intellectual problem that we have here in the United States. And I'd like to think that I'm doing my small part in being part of the solution.
Yeah. Well, has any of that derision been directed towards you for your policies?
Not that I know of. Washington, D.C. is a quite progressive, by U.S. standards at least, is a quite left-leaning city, and that has partly is to do with the fact that it's where the government is based, and so there are a disproportionate number of people who are government workers. But the usual line that is given about my party is that our ideas are unrealistic, that there isn't going to be enough money, that there are stakeholders, as they call them, which is sort of shorthand for developers and corporations and other corporate interests. We tend to get sort of a blackout in the mainstream media. My campaign did get a bit of coverage in the Washington Post, which is unusual for my party. So it's really more like we're ignored than we're really actively attacked.
Can you tell me a bit about your party then, the background? I know particularly as well, if you could, the issue of statehood, because to many of our listeners, they won't understand why that's an important issue.
Yeah, so great question. My party was formed through a merger. It was one of the parties was called the DC Statehood Party, which was founded in the 1970s by a gentleman named Julius Hobson. And it was founded with the main aim of making DC into a state. Washington was founded when the US was founded as a federal district. And the reasons for that are complex, and I don't fully understand myself. I think it was because they didn't want the founding fathers, as they're called, didn't want the capital city to be in a state, because they felt that maybe it would give that state a disproportionate influence in the governance of the new country. So Washington was founded as a federal district. Its people were not even given the right to vote in a presidential election until the 1960s.
Wow.
There has been talk of trying to make it a state for a long time, though. Anyway, we had representation, the DC Statehood Party, on the council in the 1970s. Julius Hobson was elected. He died quite young in the late 1970s, and then his protege, a woman named Hilda Mason, was on the council in the 80s and 90s. In the late 90s, the Statehood Party merged with the DC Greens to form the DC Statehood Green Party. And since then, it has continued to be the Washington, DC affiliate of the Green Party of the United States. Mm. And I know that might sound quite confusing to people in Europe, but political parties are not actually organized at the national level in the US. They're organized at the state, or in our case, district level.
Tell us about local government and what way you're standing. You know, should you be successful, what sort of powers will you take on there?
Well, it's very unlikely that I'll win, because I'm at a huge disadvantage, as I already mentioned. But Washington, D.C. has a mayor, which is essentially like has the same powers as a governor does in states. Mm-hmm. And then it has the council, which is the legislature. There are 14, or is it 13? There are 13 council members. There's one for each ward, and there are 8 wards. Then there are 2 who are called at large that represent the whole district. And then there's a chairman or chairperson who represents the whole city.
Right.
If I were to be elected, I would be one of the 13 council members who would be in charge of drafting and passing laws. And then the mayor is the executive branch, the council is the legislative branch. And
I
so
see.
And just to bring it back to statehood, what we hope would happen is that if DC became a state, the council would then become the state legislature, and the mayor's office would become the governor's office.
Well, thank you, Pete, and I apologize. I'm going to have to round up our chat, but I'll leave a final question for you just briefly. You mentioned sort of jokingly there, you're not expecting to be successful, but just sort of highlight why you think it's important that you did stand and you did give that choice, as you've mentioned.
There are a few reasons. One is because I wanted to bring issues to the table and to give greater public awareness, understanding of issues like public universal health care. The other reason is because I want to build the Green Party in or the statehood Green Party in Washington. There are a set of rules about how you maintain ballot status, and we need to have a certain amount of votes to be able to continue appearing on the ballot going forward. And the other reason was because I wanted people to have the opportunity to participate in a competitive election. What ends up happening in Washington is that the Democratic Party primaries serve as the de facto elections. And of course, only registered Democrats can vote in Democratic primaries, not people who are registered as statehood Greens like myself, not people who are registered as independents, and not people who are registered as Republicans. So that was part of that. That was another large part of why it was to make this election so it didn't have to be just another glorified coronation for the person who had won the Democratic Party primary.
And would you see, just briefly, would you see this as, regardless of the result, the start of pushing your party more into that, not into the mainstream, but getting it out into the public discourse? Would you see this as a start of that journey rather than the beginning and the end?
Well, I certainly hope so. My party has a presidential candidate, Howie Hawkins, who is offering many of the things and more than Bernie Sanders was offering. We believe in the Green Party that the Democratic Party is irreformable. There's this idea of the insider strategy. People who believe in this strategy think that the Democratic Party can somehow be brought to the left and turned into a social democratic / labor / democratic socialist party. And that was what Bernie Sanders was trying to do. I'm of the view that that is failed and always will fail. And so we now need to build an alternative to provide the left a vehicle to get representation democratically. It's an uphill battle. It's going to be very difficult. But if I thought it was a fool's errand, I wouldn't be involved in it in the first place. And I think it's important to keep in mind what is at stake. I believe, and I think the evidence overwhelmingly points to the fact that unless we replace unfettered globalized capitalism with a more humane and sustainable and just economic system that provides for people's needs within the limits of planet Earth, then the extinction of other species that we are committing on a mass scale, and I think the survival of our own species, the human species, will eventually not be viable, and we will have a dystopia on our hands. So even though it's an uphill battle, I'm glad and I'm happy to lend some of my time to trying to make some kind of third political force in the US a possibility.
That's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this edition online via the Manx Radio website or through Spotify. But for now, Gurumayu and goodbye.